2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable 2014 College Football Week 5 show, brought to you by www.southbeachshopping.com, the online shopping network of the Philly Press Box Radio College Football Network. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partners, college football national expert Terry House and Penn State and Big Ten expert in the tackle on the 1994 Penn State offense, considered by many as the greatest offense in the history of college football, the Goon, Keith Conlon. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us, Bill.
What's going on, Bill? How you doing, man?
Doing great. We got a lot to talk about, so we'll get through some of these pleasantries, and we'll get right to it today. Our www.southbeachshopping.com phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855, so feel free to call throughout the show. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Again, for those that might want to offer a comment but don't want to call, go to the Philly Press Box Facebook page and send a personal message, and we'll do our best to get your comment or question on the show. Well, gentlemen, let's get to it. Keith, we're going to start out with you. Let's talk about the Nittany Lions. You know, their weaknesses that we've talked about for several weeks, they finally caught up with them. I think we all knew this was going to happen at some point, but I don't think we thought it would be against Northwestern. What was your take on the ball game?
Entirely what you just said there. We knew the offensive line was going to be a problem going into the season. I mean, everybody knew it. I mean, last week our whole thing was they're improving each week. But you know what? Their stuff's on film, and Northwestern did a great job of coaching their guys up and making the right calls and having their guys in the right position, and they just really exploited the weak offensive line run blocking and pass blocking. I mean, it was just I know you guys are Penn State guys. I mean, it was very reminiscent of a game in 2004 that Penn State lost 6-4 to Iowa. It was just like one of those things where they couldn't get out of their own way. It was just like one of those games. It was so hard to watch. Northwestern went up 14-0. I did not think that Northwestern would have scored more than 14 points on our defense. So, again, you got to tip your hat to Northwestern. They came to play. Their backs were against the wall. They were the wounded dog in the corner. And it was their first Big Ten game. And, they came into Penn State and took it to Penn State at homecoming. I mean, I always say Penn State never loses homecoming, never loses senior day, and Northwestern came in and just ruined a beautiful day at Penn State.
Yeah, Terry, what was your first take?
Yeah, great job, Keith, as always. It was very surprising. I mean, we talked about this. I also felt like Northwestern would not give them, too many problems. I thought the offensive line would definitely play better this week. And in the first three games that Northwestern had, they really struggled. They looked really poor against Cal. They looked really bad against Northern Illinois. They didn't look good against Western Michigan. And then, going into this game, they didn't put anything on film that would make you think that they would give Penn State trouble. Keith pointed out, obviously, it was the first Big Ten game, and, Fitz did a good job of getting his guys ready to play. And they were definitely very focused. They were efficient offensively. It wasn't like they lit the world on fire. But they did enough, and they made enough plays. And, Penn State, once again, just couldn't run the football. I mean, 50 yards rushing, 2.0 average. They also didn't execute very well on third down. I mean, 3-for-17 in the game. The game was still competitive until that pick for the touchdown. But the offense just didn't look in sync again. I mean, this is really, five games now where we've had a very kind of topsy-turvy, offensive, game plan, really. And, we keep talking about the O-line and their ability to run the ball, and they now rank 112th in the country in rushing with just over 100 yards, and they're 104th in sacks allowed. So as you guys both pointed out, you know, it just the offensive line is just not doing a very good job. Defensively, I still think they played pretty well. You know, Northwestern had a couple efficient drives early on, but Penn State buckled down a little bit there in the second and third quarter, and, you know, they did their job. They're doing enough. I mean, when you look at this at the end of the day, and we've talked about this now for 5 weeks, and we've looked at all the different angles, and we've talked about special teams, we've talked about the offensive line, we've talked about defense. I mean, this is probably, you know, an 8-4 team, and that's a good year. I mean, when you think about it, when, you know, Franklin took over and, you know, he's just getting started, and, you know, he has to kind of get his recruiting base back up, and, you know, all the sanctions were still looming over them. Obviously, that's been lifted now. You know, a lot of positive momentum on the recruiting trail. But, you know, the reality is that I think, you know, if everybody was being honest, this probably wasn't the year for them to make a run. You know, could they still do something? Absolutely. But, you know, with Maryland and Indiana and Ohio State and Michigan State, even Temple, we're going to talk about Temple later. With those guys still on the schedule, you know, there's probably going to be a few more losses in there for sure. And as Keith pointed out last week, they very easily could be, you know, 2-3 right now, or you know, as opposed to 4-1 where they sit, if it weren't for Hackenberg and that defense playing as well. But you know, it was a tough game, not expected, and you know, I'm sure they'll get things right for that game against Michigan. I guess we'll talk about them later as well, but definitely a surprise.
Yeah, one thing that really surprised me, and I guess it's you know, it's the natural clock in the quarterback's head. But it looked like Christian knew that he was not going to have much time to throw the football, and he was checking down from receiver to receiver to receiver in like a half a second. I mean, he knew there wasn't going to be a whole lot of time, and he was he never set his feet hardly for anything, and he just was trying to get rid of the ball to short routes as quick as he could, it seemed like to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's out there. He's not running for his life, I wouldn't say, but I think that he's beginning to feel the ghosts. You know, when the quarterback starts getting hit a lot, he starts feeling ghosts out there, and he's starting to sit there and say, you know what, I got to get the ball out of here real quick, and he's not doing his reads. He's not doing his proper reads. He's not using the proper footwork, and, you know, a lot of people are sitting there, and they're mad at Hackenberg saying he has regressed, and he has done this, and he is that. They need to shut the hell up is what they need to do. I mean, you know, this kid's the real deal here. He's, again, let's go back to it again. He's a 19-year-old sophomore. I mean, he's just – it's – okay, has a bad game, but was it really a bad game? If he is getting hit every second time he drops back, you know? You know what? I mean, it just seems that Franklin has lived a glorified life. This is really his first, like, any kind of setback since he's been here since February. I mean, everything is going well for him. They're killing it recruiting. They've got all the recruits they wanted. They haven't really had any big upsets of losing a big recruit they were after. They went to Ireland. They win a big game. They come from behind and win a big game against a great coaching staff. They come back. The sanctions get reduced. I mean, it was like a charmed life he was living there, you know. They go to Rutgers, a hostile environment, and they don't play well, but they end up winning the game. It was like, you know what? It was just like it was going to happen eventually. That bubble had to burst eventually.
Yeah. And you know, the one other thing that really surprised me early in the game is Northwestern seemed to exploit the Penn State defense in the zone pass routes. They were hitting those seams, and they were getting big gainers. And they fixed it a little bit later, as Terry said, in the second and third quarter. They buckled down. The rushing defense is still fantastic. And, you know, they gave up 2.7 yards a carry and 38 carries. A great day by them. But it seemed like there were some holes in that defense, and Northwestern found them early in the game.
Yeah, they definitely did, Bill. And I think you know, Penn State wasn't able to be quite as disruptive as they've been in the past. And, you know, Northwestern was able to kind of sit back there you know, kind of poke holes in that zone, as you pointed out. And just going back to something that Keith was saying about Hackenberg, I mean, the kid is still very special, obviously. I don't know why people would be down on him. But when you look at it, Keith, and I'd love to get your point on this, or you too, Bill, I mean, the cumulative effect of him taking shots and getting hit as much and being sacked as many times as he has, I think it's like, as you pointed out, the ghosts are kind of it's starting to take effect on him for sure. And with them, with their inability to run the football, you know, it's just going to get tougher from here on out. It's going to be more physical. You know, Maryland, Indiana, there's some good teams on the docket, Michigan State, Ohio State. I mean, they're going to have to figure this out. I mean, it's like you said, he's a special, special player. But, I mean, they're going to have to figure something out because, you know, it's really – it's like body blows from a boxer. You know, it's just a cumulative effect that's really starting to weigh on him, I think. And that's,
and they take their toll after a while.
Yeah, and
you know,
and absolutely right. And in turn – I'm sorry, go ahead, Keith.
Well, and the boxers go to the body in the early rounds, and it's going to pay off in the later rounds. I mean, don't let them breathe later. I mean, you know, like I said about him hearing ghosts, but if you think about this, he was an 18-year-old freshman last year. Every team they played last year stacked the box and said, you know what, you've got to pass. We're not going to let you run on us. You got to throw the ball. You got to prove to us that you can throw the ball. Now they're saying, okay, we're going to drop eight back or drop six or seven back, and they're going to say, you can't run the ball. We're going to stop you from passing. So Penn State has to step up now. And the next step, the next progression for Penn State is they have to run the ball, or this is going to happen week in and week out.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think they can also, and obviously if I know this, real college football coaches know it, but there's other things they could do then run the ball that are still basically like runs, swing passes, quick screens, some other things that they could take some of the pressure off the offensive line and still be able to empty that box out a little bit and then open up where they can actually run the ball some.
Yeah, no question. You see them do that with Hamilton. They run a lot of bubbles. I would love to see them get Belt in the ball, you know, more in space. He's so fluid. He's such a good catcher of the ball, and when he has the ball in his hands out there, you know, he's very fluid as a runner. I'd love to see them try to find more ways to get him the ball in space. And like I said, Hamilton and Lewis, I mean, they have weapons. They can do this. You're right. They don't technically have to line up and run for 250 yards every game. They have to be somewhat effective, obviously, because it enables you to play action pass off that. And that's something that I think, you know, Hackenberg will do a good job of. But you're right. I mean, they can find creative ways to get the ball into some of these guys' hands. And, look, Hamilton's great with the ball. Like I said, Belton's great with the ball. I mean, they have guys that can do it. It's just a matter of, you know, executing that when they have opportunities.
Yeah. When, speaking of Deshaun Hamilton, I mean, he was definitely a bright spot, another bright spot for the offense. Another 100-yard game, six catches, 100 yards. 51 yard was his long. That's the third time this year he's gone over 100 yards. In five games, he's amassed 36 catches, 502 yards. What a season for the young sophomore.
That's a nice welcome to the Big Ten and a nice way for Penn State to recover after Allen Robinson left last year. I mean, he really came out of nowhere. It really wasn't the world wasn't expected of him going into the season, him or Geno, but they've been bright spots.
Yeah, and speaking of Smith, Geno Lewis, 29 catches for 495 yards himself. So he's got 200 yard games and a 98 yard game. So, you know, they're 1,000 yards between those two guys. Just, who would ever thought that? Even, you know, early in in our broadcast, we talked about that and thinking that receivers were really going to be a big issue. But, wow, what a great job by these two guys.
Yeah, it was expected to be the tight ends who were supposed to be filled, catching all those passes and all. And, you know, they really haven't lit the world on fire this year.
No.
You know, the offensive line's the first thing that could complain about when it comes to run blocking. But a lot of it has to go back to the tight ends, too. I mean, they have to be held accountable for the blocking a little bit, too, so.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Let me ask you, Keith, from the old playing days, Christian Hackenberg, Bill Belton, little confrontation on the sidelines. They kissed and made up on Twitter, I guess. Anything to it?
No. I mean, it's just our society now. Everything is seen nowadays. It was just probably one guy telling the other guy, just relax, we got this going on. I can go back to a story. We're losing to Illinois. We're down 21-0, and I mean, I constantly go back to 1994. I feel like that old man. Right? I feel like that guy. we're on the sidelines. We're down 21-0 in the first quarter against Illinois, going against the best defense in the country, yada, yada, yada. Some coaches are losing their stuff. Some players are yelling and screaming, and I'm on the sidelines with all the offensive linemen, and we're all just like, shut the hell up. We're fine. They've done nothing we don't know. We have done everything they've done we gave to them. So it was just like, hey, man, we got three quarters to go. Just relax. We got time. Just get us the ball. Don't give them any more points, and we're good to go. I mean, it was like one of those things. And, you know, with Dalton and Hackenberg, it was just like, you know, maybe it was, hey, stop trying to do so much. Do your job. Or, you know, don't you tell them to do my job. It's just, you know, we're all workers. I mean, you guys get competitive with guys you work with and stuff like this. I mean, it happens in the football field all the time.
Yeah, and by the way, your Illinois ended up.
It sounds like in the huddle, Bill.
But your Illinois game turned out.
Good.
I was going to say, your Illinois game turned out to be one for the Penn State history books.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, I was trying to say that, you know, trust me, in the huddle is 10 times worse. I mean, it gets into that, you know, you're just trying to fire each other up. Some guys just are very, like, you know, they'll go into a little shell and they'll, you know, like meditate or whatever. And some guys get real, real loud and obnoxious and this and that. It's just how people are. It is what it is.
Terry, what was your take?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like to see the quarterback get a little fired up and, you know, take charge. And, you know, it's not a bad thing. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, what sport it is. Or like you said, Keith, I mean, it happens in work. You get competitive, and that's a good thing. You know what I mean? And they obviously made up, as you said, on Twitter, which is funny again. I mean, you know, we're not as young as these guys. I do find it funny that, you know, they would you know, make up on Twitter. But anyway,
probably
yeah.
The same party, first of all.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah.
They're probably at the same party texting or Twittering each other. Hey, man, I'm sorry. We're good, right?
Yeah. Well, play it out in the public forum. Nothing better than that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, it's as Keith said, that's a positive. I mean, like I said, I like to see my leader, you know, get into it a little bit, get fired up. I mean, that's kind of par for the course, if you will.
Yep, absolutely. And I'm with you. I don't have a bit of problem with it. Guys trying to win a football game, so no problem. It seems like it kind of got blown up a little more in the media, surely than
no.
Of course, that's what the media's all about, right? That'll get you on ESPN.
That'll lead us into our next conversation of they're just churning to get Brady Hoke fired in this meeting, aren't they? They're just trying everything right now.
Well, we're going to get back to that. Let's get on with this. Let's talk about Temple for a few minutes and Villanova. Then we'll come back because I want to spend a little time talking about that whole Brady Hoke situation. What, my gosh, it was on the Today Show today. So we'll get back to that. But let's talk about the Owls right quick. They continue to roll. They're 3-1 with Matt Rhule. They're headed into their bye week after a 36-10 whipping of UConn. Tulsa's next up for the Owls. I actually I got to watch that game, or a good portion of it, as I was trying to watch a couple other games too. But Temple looks pretty good. They struggled out of the gates a little bit early, and then just took complete control. And they're playing good football, boys.
Hey, good for Matt Rhule. I mean, he's doing a great job down there. Couple buddies on the team from down there playing. Defensive line is really, really aggressive. It's good for Matt. It's good for Temple. It's good for Philadelphia sports. Remember, this is their second bye now because the 1 week they had a bye, we had actually picked up the win. So they're coming
right.
They have a pretty light schedule so far this year. But I mean, they're 3-1 right now. They're competitive. They're winning games. I mean, it's just, you know, having grown up in the Philadelphia area, it's always good. You know, what does Temple need to take the next step? What do they need? And it's, I think I'm finally seeing it. We've been looking for this day since Paul Palmer graduated from Penn State with Bruce Arians as the head coach.
Oh,
you know, I mean, that's just how long it's been. 1985, 1986 was when those two were there. And look what Arians is doing now. It's unbelievable. But, you know, I've always, you know, had a little soft spot for Temple in the heart. And obviously having that Rhule down there, it's even softer stat in my heart. So, happy for them. They're a real good team. I mean, they may come up here and lay the wood to Penn State if Penn State plays like that up front. If Penn State does not improve up front, Temple will come up here on November 15th and absolutely take them behind the woodshed. they're playing
well,
that well.
The interesting thing about that game, though, Keith, was that Temple couldn't run the ball either. They only ran the ball 24 times for 41 yards in that game themselves. So they better do a better job before they come see the Penn State front seven themselves. But they are getting great quarterback play from P.J. Walker, no doubt about that.
Yeah, P.J. Walker's playing really well. And what I really love about this victory is that the defense was such a big part of it. They scored two defensive touchdowns. They had a safety. And they just simply found a way to win the game. And I think UConn ended up outgaining them, but obviously they were down a little bit. But we've seen Temple in other games be more assertive on offense. But as we said, this team has drastically improved. And, you know, you guys obviously have a tie-in there, so you're rooting for them, you know, the local team. And but I think it's a great story, probably one of the, you know, the better stories of college football so far. You know, obviously not at that level of, you know, the Alabamas and, you know, on the minds of many, but Temple's a quality football team and you know, probably one of the more improved teams in the country. So good for Temple.
Absolutely. And, you know, after Tulsa, they go to Houston for a national televised game. So that ought to be interesting, too. Houston's only 2-2 at this point. But those guys, you know, they like to throw the ball around down there. So that'll be a Friday night 9 o'clock game for the Owls down in Houston. So we'll get back to that here in another week or so, but good job by Matt Rhule, good job by the Owls, and hey, 3-1, they're going to be bowl bound. They're going to certainly be bowl eligible and win a few more games. They're going to be playing somewhere in bowl land. All right, let's talk about the Wildcats. I did everything I could to try to find this game somewhere on the TV, and I couldn't find it. Villanova. They continue to roll, 41-7 win over the Penn Quakers. Again, as we said last week, maybe that game was better off to be played in the Palestra, but it wasn't much of a contest. The Wildcats put up 567 yards in the game, scored all 41 points of their points in the first half before pulling off the dogs, and they remain ranked number 5 in this week's FCS coaches poll.
Again, that's good for Philadelphia football, good for Villanova. You know, Penn is a little step down or whatever from them in the Ivy League, but you know, they're doing what they have to do, and that is going out there, dropping teams, scoring, putting a lot of points up on them. You know, Andy Talley's he's doing what he does. He's been doing it for a lot of years, and he's been around the block a few times, man. I mean, more than a few times. So he knows what he's doing. Again, he has a real good program going down there. And, you know, I wouldn't, you know, don't be surprised if they make a run for it. They make a run for a national title this year. You know, and it gets that elusive one.
Yep.
Absolutely. I think Villanova's for real. I mean, the quarterback's fantastic. Yeah. We've spoken about him a few times now over the last couple of weeks. But in this game, they also kind of were most certainly very balanced. They ran for over 300 yards, and they had 5 different ball carriers have 45 yards or more. I thought that was pretty cool. And the defense was obviously very sound. Like you said, UPenn's probably a step down at that point. But this team, as we've said the last couple of weeks, they're going to make a run. They're absolutely going to make a run. That's going to be fun for us to track that through the season. And they're number 5 right now. And as you said, for Philadelphia sports, for football in particular, because I think most people think of it as, you know, a basketball town or a baseball town with its history. But you know, for these two programs to play as well as they are, it's great for the city of Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, having grown up there, I think my father was the epitome of what a Philadelphia football fan was, and that was you were an Eagles fan first, and then you know when it came to colleges and stuff like that, that always played second fiddle to the Eagles, whether it was even baseball, hockey, basketball, whatever. But my father, you know, football was always professional town in them. And I'll tell you a little small story here is that when Joe Pa came down to recruit my older brother in January of 1983, he was a month, 2 or 3 weeks out of winning the national title in New Orleans versus Georgia. He was in my house, and my father tells a story because in one of the Paterno books, my father is quoted in it as saying, you know, Paterno came in my house and turned a whole family of Eagle fans into Penn State football fans in 3 hours. So that is the epitome of what Philadelphia fans are. They're Eagles fans. We're a professional football town that'll watch football on Saturday. But you know what? When you get to a team that you like, your alma mater, whether, you know, it's a lot of Notre Dame, a lot of Penn State. You have the Temple people who went there. You have your Villanova. But it's always been a pro town. But when you have that college town, that college feel, they're going to be there. They're going to rally around it. The Philadelphia fans are going to start rallying for Temple if they already aren't. You know, I mean, I know roots for Temple. I mean, it's literally 10 minutes, 15 minutes from where I grew up, you know. So, of course I want to see Matt Rule and the Temple guys doing well, so.
That's a cool story. I like that.
Oh, it's funny. It was true, though.
Yeah. And just for the record, the four teams ranked ahead of Villanova, North Dakota State at 4-0, Eastern Washington at 4-1, whose only loss came to Washington 59-52, Coastal Carolina at 5-0, and McNeese State at 2-1, who took Nebraska down to the final minute. And then Villanova at 3-1, as we know, who lost that double overtime game to Syracuse. So
yep.
These guys are quality.
Yeah, no question. Those first two teams especially, those are two really, really good football teams. That'll be interesting to see as it plays out. There could be some really good matchups. That's really good football. That's really good football.
Yep. All right. Well, let's take a minute and thank our sponsor. As we know, everybody nowadays wants to shop online. Well, we've got the place for you. You can do all your shopping from one location and get cash back on your purchases from over 3,000 stores. It's South Beach Shopping's Mall Without Walls, and it's simple to do. Go to www.south-beach-shopping.com and click on the top Shop tab. From there, click Sign In, Register to become a preferred customer. That's it. You're free to look around at all the products and click on the All Stores tab and check out all 3,000-plus network stores by alphabet. All the big stores are there. It's a great opportunity to get cash back and even comparison shop. And best yet, it's free to register. If you have questions, click on the Contact Us tab on the homepage and click on your shop consultant, South Beach Shopping, to leave a message. And I can tell you this, fellas, I actually did this the other day. I needed some things from Staples for work. I went on through the site, purchased what I wanted online, got 4% cash back on my purchase, and got an email about 15 minutes later that my order was ready to pick up. Went down the store, picked it up, was out the door with 4% cash back savings. So it definitely does work, and I tried it, and it's good.
Nice.
Cool.
All right.
I had the same deal with the beer distributor down the street from me. It's great.
Do you place your order over the phone or the internet?
I just call in and say, hey, it's due. They'll be there at 15. You got it. You're really later. Yeah, we had a nice little homecoming tailgate this past week. It was pretty funny. My one buddy has a big Winnebago, and he picks me up on College Ave out front of Damon's at 8 o'clock in the morning. At 7:44, I'm outside of the beer distributor, and I'm one of 50 people waiting by the door because the beer distributor can't open until 8 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I waited out there.
Why am I thinking they have your order sitting there ready to go out the door?
I had 15 cases of beer sitting out of College Ave with my thumb out saying, you know what, pick me up, please, somebody.
Nice. Well, Keith, I'd like to move back to Penn State again before for a few minutes and talk about the bye week approach from the total team approach, but especially the offensive line standpoint, and get your take on how you would approach the extra preparation time. And, you know, we know, as we've been saying, that the O-line needs to continue to improve. You've
yep.
got a whole bunch of extra practices over the next 3 weeks with two byes. What's your approach? What are you going to do from here?
I'm looking at it right now. You know, this bye week coming in here right now versus the bye week they have after Michigan. We have a bye week, Michigan, bye week. You're going to have two distinctly different bye weeks, in my opinion. This one right now is just rest and recoup, in my opinion, because you've been at it hard for 8 straight weeks now. You've been at it for a month for football camp. Then you're in 4 or 5 weeks. You played 5 games already. You know, you're beat up. You're beat down. There's the last thing they were traveling. Hell, they were in Europe a month ago, you know. So these guys are tired. There's no doubt about it. They're really, really tired. I know what Coach Franklin did this week is he hasn't practiced every Sunday. That's his normal routine. The players' day off is on Monday. He kept that same routine. They had practice Tuesday, and they're going to have practice tomorrow, and then they have off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm going to tell you what he's going to say. Get your books straight. Catch up on the books a little bit. Get home. Catch your high school football game Friday night, Saturday afternoon, whatever it is you play. Get home. Catch it. We'll see you Sunday for practice, and let's get ready for Michigan. That's as a team right there. These guys need a little break from Penn State football. I mean, we all do, I guess, in a certain way. And that's just you just got to recharge your batteries, you know. And that's all it is right now. These bye weeks are fantastic. When I came back to coach here in the 2005 team, when I came back here and worked in the weight room, they didn't have a bye week. I mean, they went 11, 12 straight games, and I was like, dang.
It's pretty tough, you know. I mean, it's every week they were going at it. Now, these guys have a bye week back to what I was having when I was playing. And, you know, Joe's thing, and I'm sure that Coach Price is the exact same thing, and that is get your book straight, get a couple workouts in, get a couple lifts in, don't get out of shape, have active rest this weekend. You don't want to go home. The last thing you want to do is just lay on the couch like I do every weekend. Lay on the couch, you know, Saturday and Sunday and drink beer and watch TV and watch football games all weekend. They don't want these kids doing that. They're probably going to tell them to have some active rest, get up, walk around, go do some stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. As an offensive line, I mean, these guys have been pretty much had everybody attacking them since August 5th or 6th when they started camp. And it's been what everybody's worried about going into the season. It's what everybody is worried about right now, especially after last week's performance. I think those guys need to get away, relax a little bit, you know, again, recharge batteries mentally, physically, and then, you know, come back on Sunday refreshed and ready to go. So, you know, it's something that they can get some film tape. They'll watch that Rutgers. What they're going to do is they're all going to watch that Rutgers-Michigan game Saturday night intently, trust me. And they're going to watch that because they played Rutgers. They know exactly what kind of team Rutgers is, so they're going to see how they match up against Michigan and then get their little pre-scouting report that way.
Terry, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that was pretty cool. I mean, he gave you an in-depth look at, you know, the schedule and, you know, what they're probably going to do in terms of preparation. Obviously, as Keith pointed out, after having, you know, 5 weeks plus camp and all that, it is a good time for a break. And it gives the coaches a chance to kind of regroup themselves because, you know, obviously the players have to recharge, but the coaches need to recharge as well. And they're going to get out on the recruiting trail a little bit and, you know, kind of develop some of those relationships that they've, you know, started to develop here since, you know, the beginning of the summer and see some high school games themselves. And it is a strange to have a bye and then a game against Michigan, which, depending on how things go, might be like a bye as well. So, you know, they might have, you know, three byes in a row if you look at it that way. But they'll get things back on track. And I think, you know, come next week when they're at practice, they'll be fired up and ready to go. And, hey, look, you know, Michigan's Michigan. Even though it's a dumpster fire and there's lots of issues going on, I'm pretty positive Penn State's going to be fired up to go in there. And you know what? They're going to want to make it worse. They're going to want to make it worse. And I'm sure that Coach Franklin is a tremendous he's a tremendous coach, and he most certainly can fire those guys back up. And you know, they'll do everything that they need to do. They'll do all their due diligence in terms of film work and all that. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, just getting away from it for a few days and then, you know, coming back to practice a little bit rejuvenated and excited about the next week, it'll do wonders. I think you'll see a different team in terms of, you know, their excitement level and their focus. That was one thing that kind of surprised me about this Northwestern game is they seemed really flat, and they seemed flat for the whole game. It just never really kind of turned on. It was almost like they were going uphill the entire game, and they just never quite were able to get over that hump and then roll down. You know, I think that they were a little bit, you know, kind of broken down and a little bit tired, and, you know, this bye week is going to do, it's going to do wonders for them. I expect them to come out and play really well against Michigan, and I hopefully we'll see the offensive line do that. You know, I'm sure that they'll be spoken to pretty sternly here, and you know, I expect them to play better. So, great time for a bye. Great time for a bye.
You know, having been part of a couple of teams that have lost bad games and going to the bye, it's the worst time as a player.
because you just want to get out. You know, you have a bad game on Saturday. You just want to get out there on Sunday, Monday, you know, prove your worth. And the coaches want to do that too. Tell you a little something. I noticed in James Franklin's press conference. Remember the Virginia Tech game when against Ohio State, and Urban Meyer's speech after the game was, "Well, it's pretty apparent what our problem is out there. We're going to fix it. We're going to fix it." Pretty much threw the offensive line and the quarterback under the bus. Did you guys notice that back then?
Yeah. Yep.
James Franklin goes in his press conference this week, says four different times, "I will fix this. I will fix this. I will fix this." You know, taking the blame on himself, saying, you know, he took a lot of the blame. I mean, that took you to stand. I mean, there's a little piece of blame going around on them. It wasn't just all the players. The game plan wasn't right. And, you know, frankly, he had every right in the world to throw some people under the bus, but he didn't do it. I got to respect it. Got to love it.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we've talked about Michigan's struggles nearly every week, and things seems to be getting worse for those guys. They were pounded by Minnesota, as the two of you predicted, and for some reason I thought with their backs against the wall, Michigan would really stand up and play, and they folded like a cheap suit. But I'd like to get your thoughts, some of your thoughts first. One, the fans doing the mass exodus in the third quarter at Michigan Stadium, but more importantly, Brady Hoke's handling of quarterback Shane Morris' possible concussion. I think you probably all saw that now. It was even on the Today Show this morning. And as we know, Michigan visits Rutgers this week. They play Penn State next week, and then they have their bye week. Let me ask you this. Is the Shane Morris situation just another reason for the guys that want to get rid of Hoke to jump on the bandwagon, or did he totally mishandle that situation? Terry, what do you think first?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's funny, both the offensive coordinator and Brady Hoke both said that they didn't see him wobble, they didn't see him stumbling around, they didn't think that it was anything other than the ankle injury. I don't know whether I believe that or not. You know, obviously there's other eyes on what's going on, so you would think that there would be some communication, but anytime you have any kind of injury like that and there's any kind of speculation that it could be a head injury, I mean, you have to do everything that you possibly can to obviously alleviate any kind of issues or concerns. So they fumbled it regardless of whether or not they, you know, he really knew the extent of what was going or not. They didn't handle it properly. The AD came out today and, you know, said as much and said that they didn't go through the proper steps to evaluate him properly. You know, I understand it from a player side as well, where, you know, he was probably telling him, you know, and shaking it off, and, you know, he wanted to stay on the field, he wanted to play, and, you know, it's a very unfortunate situation. You know, I don't know if Brady Hoke knew exactly what was going on or not, but he should have. And, you know, I feel really bad for, you know, for Morris and that whole situation. And the Michigan program, I mean, you said the mass exodus in the third quarter. I mean, it's a shame for a blue blood, you know, program. And these are very loyal fans. I mean, Keith, you could speak to that, even though you're a Penn State guy. You could speak to how loyal Michigan fans are. And, you know, nobody wants to give up on their coach. And, you know, but the writing's on the wall. It's, you know, this is another reason for, you know, those that are in charge to really take a close look. And I don't know how Brady Hoke is going to make it out of October. I really don't. I think it's only going to get worse. He's lost the locker room, even though some players have come out and stood up for him. You know, the play on the field doesn't show that. The play on the field doesn't show that these kids are putting forth the kind of effort to compete. When you lose to Minnesota in that manner, at home, in front of that crowd, you know, they're not competing for him. You know, it's over. It's just a matter of time. And this will be a reason for, you know, people to kind of jump on the bandwagon. And it's just another excuse, if you will, for them to part ways with him. But, you know, it's one of those things where even when you want to get rid of somebody, you better make sure that you have somebody that you feel can really step in and do a better job, you know, at least in the back of your mind. And there's some names out there. We'll see if, you know, any of that comes to fruition. But, you know, very unfortunate situation with Morris. School didn't handle it well. Brady Hoke didn't handle it well. You know, the fans see the writing on the wall. It's just a matter of time, in my opinion.
Keith, what's your thinking?
Fantastic point, Tara. Just spot on with, you know, he's not going to make it through October. There's no doubt. There's no way. But, you know, the whole concussion issue, it's such the hot topic of the moment right now. And we got Good Morning America doing a special on it, on how you know this and how you know that. You know, You know, if they go back to something, should Brady Hoke have a headset on? I mean, a lot
right.
of people complain that he doesn't have a feel for the game without having the headset on. You know, and there's another indication right there where the doctor couldn't get to him to tell him, hey, this is what's going on. When the doctor could have told someone on one of the headsets and said, hey, Brady, you know, he's out. He's hurt right now. We're running tests right now. Maybe I don't know. I don't want to say that was the issue or this or that, not, but again, it's such a hot topic, the hot button topic. It's just they have to make a big thing out of it, and that happens. That's going to fall through the cracks. I mean, what was there? They pulled him out of the game. He went over head test again, and they had a turnover. He runs back onto the field. You know, how is the head coach supposed to know about that? You know.
There was only one play that took place, and the other quarterback went in and he lost his helmet. So he had to come off the field, and Morris ran back on.
Yeah, so the doctor doesn't have enough you-know-whats to stop the kid from running off the field or to make a decision quick on his feet and saying, hey, we can't do this, get him out of there. But then they're going to complain about it later. I think they're looking for stuff to get rid of Brady Hoke, in my opinion. They're just trying to dig up everything right now.
No question. Apparently, the doctor said he wasn't cleared to go back out. But to your point, did anybody communicate with Brady Hoke that you know, someone had a conversation and evaluated him and he couldn't go back in? Apparently, they just called his name because they needed somebody to go in, and they didn't know what was going on. So, again, whether they knew the extent of it or not, they probably should have. And to your point, maybe Brady should put those headsets on.
Or have somebody right next to him saying, having the headset on, saying, hey, coach, you can't go right now. We need a timeout. I mean, this is Brady Hoke. This is not a brutally hard man. I've heard nothing but good stuff about Brady Hoke as a man. He is not going to put one of his players in physical jeopardy, in my opinion. Everything I've heard about the man is he is a good man. You know, he's not going to do that. So this is just the media trying to make some stuff out of it. It's what they do. I saw it happen here live and how they just churn and churn and churn, and all of a sudden, their heads got to start rolling. And, you know, for all those people who wanted the Michigan man to come back there, I mean, what are they going to say now? They had Rich Rodriguez there who changed the program, changed the face of it, and they were going absolutely crazy about it. They weren't winning games. They weren't winning Michigan way. They didn't have a Michigan man. They brought a Michigan man back, and now what are they going to say now?
Right. You know, the one thing that I found interesting in all this, and that, you know, I couldn't see the sidelines, what was going on, but all this happened so fast. He came off the field. The other kid ran in, ran a play. Then Morris runs back on the field. I don't even know if doctors even had time to even see him to ask him, you know, if it was Saturday.
Yeah,
it all just happened so quick, and it seems to me like the only thing that maybe would have made sense looking back at it is if somebody had called timeout.
Yeah,
you know, call timeout and figure out what's going on, because it just
apparently,
like I say, Hoke not having a headset on. You know, your coach Keith never put his headset on in his life, but times have changed a little bit with injuries and things like that. But you know, I just don't know. I don't know that you can blame the doctors. I don't know if you can blame Hoke. I don't know if you can blame anybody, because it all happened within a matter of, say, a minute and a half.
And the kid's a competitor. He wants out there.
Right.
He doesn't want to sit on the sidelines and have some guy put his thumb on his nose saying, follow this finger, follow that finger. I'm trying to win a game. My brothers need me out there, so. It's tough.
Again,
they're just circling right now. The vultures are just circling out in Ann Arbor. And it's sad. To see a blue blood program like that, I mean, hell, look at Ohio State right now. They're looking up at Michigan. They're looking at Penn State. Absolute disarray. They're just loving it right now.
Well, if you look at the Michigan schedule, they've beaten Appalachian State, beat Miami, Ohio, and they lost to Notre Dame, Utah, and Minnesota. So they've got Rutgers and Penn State next, and then their bye week. I'm not sure, you know, if wins against Rutgers and Penn State save his job or not. But if he loses one of them, I think he's absolutely gone in the bye week, because they come back October 25th after the bye and go to Michigan State, and then it's not going to be pretty there.
No, I have to get this out there before I get shot by my buddy at home. I'm having the Doom Show's having a viewing party down in Philadelphia for the Michigan game, the Penn State Alumni Association. of Philadelphia at the Fieldhouse Phillies downtown underneath in the Reading Terminal. So I wanted to say something real quick. So if anybody has any plans for that Penn State Michigan game next Saturday night, come join us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Give us more information each week as it gets closer, and we'll sure get it out there.
Yeah, man. It's a good time.
Anytime. Well, Terry, you're thinking, do they even have a chance to win this Rutgers game?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say no.
Not one of our pick'em games we're going to get to
later.
No,
it's a disaster. I mean, some of the words that were being thrown around about the internal struggles of what's going on are, you know, dysfunctional, I mean, complete disconnect. I mean, it's a mess. It's a dumpster fire. I don't see how that team can turn around and go up against a team like Rutgers, who we saw is a very athletic and physical team. You know, they're going to run the football, and they're more efficient at the quarterback position. Rutgers is a better team. I mean, it's as simple as that. And Michigan's going to have to go in there. It's a tough place. No way. I mean, I would be completely shocked if Michigan went in there and got a win. How do you guys feel?
What do you think? Keith, any
chance? I got lost. Do I think Michigan? It's at Rutgers, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
it's
a night game. They're going to be all looped up again, like they were for the Penn State game. I mean, they may hate Penn State, but you know what? It's Michigan coming across, man. It's a huge game, but you know
big
what? I'm such a hardcore old school guy. I think that the kids are going to rally. So, I mean, I keep getting disappointed every week. I mean, saying, you know what? Michigan's going to pull it out. Because I don't want to see Rutgers make their name on beating absolutely just, you know, a two-legged dog. I mean, they're not a three-legged dog right now. They're a two-legged dog out there in Michigan. So they're coming in dragging their heels. And Rutgers is going to – I hope they don't try and make their name on Michigan. And I hope that Michigan pulls that out. Do I think it's going to happen? No, I think Rutgers is going to take it to them.
Brady Hoke might not make it past Monday, Bill.
Well, I don't think they'll make their move until the bye week. So they've got the two games they got to get through.
I was the last time that the Rich Rod coached up here, I believe it was the 2007 or 2008 game, and Penn State just absolutely humiliated them up here. And I made the call. I said, I don't think that Rich Rodriguez makes the tarmac of Ann Arbor. You know, I think he's they're going to drop him off somewhere in Toledo, just let him parachute out. Cooper style, you know. So,
Lane Kiffin, just like my man Lane Kiffin.
Exactly. You know, what's up out there? I mean, the Raiders fired their head coach via phone call too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Times have sure changed.
Well,
yeah,
you know
crazy.
What? Hey, Keith, maybe they'll let him go on Twitter.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll find out on Twitter.
they can apologize through Twitter.
That's right. All right, well, you know, guys, as you start to get a little older, some of those aches and pains start to really take over. For me, it was a chronic right shoulder from too much football and too many games behind the plate. It got to the point that it was really affecting my quality of life. I finally listened to a friend that kept suggesting I go to www.south-beach-shopping.com and order a bottle of OPC3. It's an all-natural isotonic product that reduces inflammation. I took a couple capfuls a day mixed with water for about 3 weeks, and my shoulder pain went away. It still pops and cracks, but it doesn't hurt, and that's what matters the most. I'm back golfing and even pitching batting practice again. It's OPC3 and available at www.southbeachshopping.com. To register for free, click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in, register to become a preferred customer. That's it. Type in OPC3 in the search bar, and you can drill down and read all the details. OPC3 is now part of my early morning routine, and I'm glad it is. All right. Well, since we have a bunch of games this week, we're going to spend a few extra minutes with our predictions. There are six games matching up ranked teams, and so let's take a look at our predictions from last week and see how we did, and then we'll make this week's pick. This is going to be the best Saturday so far of the season, I think, with some of these matchups we've got.
No question.
Let's look at the last week real quick, and then we'll have a little time to do a take on those other games. Northwestern at Penn State, everybody took the Nittany Lions, and everybody didn't win. So Temple and UConn, we all had Temple, so we're good. Villanova at Penn, we all had Villanova, so we're all good. UCLA at Arizona State, you guys both took the Sun Devils, and I took UCLA, so I came out of there with a big win, and I was feeling pretty good about myself on Thursday night with that win, and but it didn't follow through for me on Saturday. Minnesota at Michigan, you two both took Minnesota. As I said, I took Michigan thinking that their back was against the wall and they were really going to step up, and how wrong was I? So, and then Missouri at South Carolina, another great game. Keith, you picked the upset with Mizzou, and Terry and I both took South Carolina at home, so we're losers there. Which, Keith, that gives you the lead for the week, or the win for the week at 4-2. Terry and I were both 3-3. So the race tightens. Terry's 20-9. Bill is 20-9. And Keith is 19-10.
Wow.
Any of those games really surprise anybody the way they went down, other than Missouri winning there at the end?
Well, that was my pick of the week, was the Missouri game, so I'll take credit for that.
that was a good pick. The only surprise, really, Penn State was a surprise.
Yeah. That was a
surprise.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That was a surprise.
Absolutely. All right,
that Arizona State UCLA game, competitive for the first half, and then, you know, that kid threw that interception right before halftime to UCLA.
Yep.
UCLA returns it for a touchdown, and then they just put the whooping to them after that. I mean, I thought Arizona had a shot at home on Thursday night, but I'm going to say it. UCLA is making that, they're coming into their own a little bit. They're playing real well right now.
Yeah, UCLA, yep. Arizona State. Remember their all conference quarterback didn't play in that game.
Yeah. Well, so, didn't do too bad.
No. He threw the ball around the field pretty well. But, I mean, sure. Kelly is a good runner. Kelly is a tremendous football player. He's one of the more underrated players in the country. So, without him, that was going to be a little bit more of a difficult task. But you're right. UCLA played really well. You got to give him credit.
And UCLA is one of my Final Four teams, as you recall. So, we're going to talk about that here once we make our picks, as long as we have enough time. We'll get to that since we're going to start talking Final Four. But let's get to our picks. We've got 7 games to pick this week. So let's start out. First of all, we're going Villanova at Maine. Keith, you're going to go first.
Villanova.
You know what, Keith? We've picked on you all year going first. Let's let Terry go first.
No problem. I'll take Villanova.
All right. Keith?
Villanova.
Me too. All right. Number 6, Texas A&M at number 12, Mississippi State. I love this game.
Yeah, I do too. So I'll go first. My grandfather is a Texas A&M grad. I love my grandfather dearly, one of the more special people in my life. But I'm going to go with Mississippi State and Prescott, Dak Prescott. Mississippi State is for real. They are going to beat Texas A&M. I hate to say it. I love my grandfather, but I'm going Mississippi State.
I'm going to go with Giga Maggies, baby, Giga Maggies.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was extremely impressed with Mississippi State against LSU, and not just the fact that they won, but that game wasn't near as close as the score. I thought they dominated them from the opening kickoff. I am going with Mississippi State Bulldogs.
Woo-hoo,
at home.
Baby. There's you right there for Goom.
They're good,
yeah.
Keith. They're a good football team.
I really like this game. It's probably I probably like this game as much as anyone this weekend.
Yeah,
all right. Number 3, really? Alabama at number 11, Ole Miss.
Ooh.
Well, Lane Kiffin's got it rolling. He's got Alabama's offense being a little bit more diverse. So I still like Alabama. Ole Miss, it's going to be a good game, a very competitive game. Everybody's going to be fired up at the Grove, but I'm going to go with Alabama to win a tight game.
What do you think?
You know who I'm going with. Roll Tide, baby. Roll Tide.
Well, I'll tell you what. Call me crazy. I don't think Alabama's that good. I don't know if Ole Miss is that good, but I'm going with the Rebels.
Wow. There will be separation this week, boys. There will be some separation.
So wait a minute. You're going to have two wins in the state of Mississippi this weekend?
Yeah, hey, they're ranked number 12 and number 11 down there in Mississippi, and they got it going on.
No, they do. They're both good teams. They're both quality teams.
Interesting.
Yeah, maybe they've come up with some new funding down there somewhere in Mississippi. Oh, it's all right.
They got some new bagmen.
Yeah, that's right. All right, how about number 4, Oklahoma, at number 25, TCU?
TCU is a good quality football team, but Oklahoma is one of the best teams in the country, one of the top 2 or 3 for sure. I'm going to go Oklahoma.
I'm going to go Oklahoma because they have a chip on their shoulder all year, so they're just going to keep destroying people.
And I have to go Oklahoma as well. As you know, since I saw them play, I was real impressed. So I'm going Oklahoma in this one as well. Number 14, Stanford, at number 9, Notre Dame.
Another good game. Yeah, this is another one of those games that you're most certainly going to want to watch if you get an opportunity to. Stanford, obviously, still one of the more physical teams. I don't know if they, you know, Notre Dame's a really good team offensively. They're better than they've been the last couple of years. I am really going back and forth on this one. I'm going to go with Stanford. I think Stanford's defense will find a way to slow them down a little bit, and they'll score just enough points to win a very close game by a field goal. I have Stanford.
McNabb is going with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. I think this is their little coming out party. Michigan didn't prove to be that good, and that was supposed to be a huge win for them. Big game for Notre Dame. It's a huge game for Notre Dame. I think they're going to not do well.
Yeah, and I am also taking Notre Dame as well at home, and it's a far cry to usually get me to ever pick anything good, but they're a pretty good football team. They're playing great defense. They're fourth in the nation in points allowed. So I'm going Notre Dame. I think this is going to be one of those physical football games like that one Stanford was involved in early in the year against your Trojans.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's going to be a really good game. It could go either way.
Yep, I'm taking Notre Dame. Okay, number 15, LSU, at number 5, Auburn. Another intriguing game to me.
Yeah, no question. LSU is going to start their freshman quarterback. Obviously, they feel good about that. You know, they have a lot of young players playing on offense. Auburn, you know, I think Auburn's getting ready to kind of take off here, so I like Auburn in this game. You know, I don't know the last time we saw LSU lose, you know, two games here, but I'm going to go with Auburn in this one.
LSU back to the wall, must win situation. I'm going to go with the Tigers of LSU. I think we're complete opposite on every pick, Terry.
I know. Seriously, what's going on?
Well, I tell you what, Keith. For the exact same reason, I'm taking LSU as well. I think Auburn's probably a better team. I just think
on the road.
I just think Les Miles. I think. Well, I don't.
Jordan
think
Hare Stadium on the road.
Good.
Jordan Hare.
Yeah, that's all right. I think LSU has to come back and win, or their season's basically over. And Les
True.
Miles always does a good job of getting his teams ready to play. And as you say, the freshman quarterback may be an issue for him in that environment. But I'm going LSU. All right, last one. Number 19, Nebraska, at number 10, Michigan State.
I personally still feel that Michigan State's one of the top 5 teams in the country. I really like what they're doing. The Oregon game, you know, we can toss that out. The game was probably even a little closer than that score. So Nebraska's playing better football, but I got Michigan State in this game, and I think they win by, you know, 10-plus.
Now, sure, let's keep the routine going and go against each other every pick and have some separation this week. But, Sparty's the lead dog in the Big Ten this year. And this is one of the big games for Nebraska, but I think the Sparty should just take it.
And I am taking Michigan State as well. All right. Well, starting next week, we'll do a segment on our show as we select our Final Four. And we'll go week after week to see how we compare. We have our guys from the beginning of the year. We'll see if they're still in the mix. And we better get our homework done, fellas, because I can tell you right now, Florida State is not the best team in the country today after watching them. So we'll get to that. In the meantime, we're at it brings us close to the top of our hour, and we'd like to thank our sponsor, www.southbeachshopping.com, as well as my partners, Terry House and the Tomlin for his great insights. We'd like to remind our listeners that we'll be back next Tuesday night and talk about Week 5 as well as the upcoming weeks. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show.